One of the great things about meditating with the goddess, contemplating the goddess, is that the goddess presents herself to us in many, many forms at many, many, many moments. So she can just as easily present herself to us as a totally clear conference line or as a muddy one. And part of the practice that we're going to be doing tonight and throughout these weeks ahead is to practice looking at the goddess, regarding the goddess in all of the different guises, the beautiful ones and the ones that don't seem so beautiful. So it's an enormous pleasure and joy and truly inspiration to be beginning this conversation about the sacred feminine, the divine mother, the goddess, with all of you. And as we begin, before we chant the mantras and enter into the more specifically discourse and meditation aspect of our class tonight, I want to share with you some of the housekeeping details. And I know that some of you are very familiar with these, but some of you are not, so I'll go over them very quickly. This is a big conversation. It's a big conversation because there are about 60 people in tonight's class, many of you present on the conference, some of you, of course, tuning in via the MP3. You're from all over the United States, from Canada, from Central America. There are a few of you from Europe, and there are a couple from Australia who are doing the classes through Skype. And as many of you know, these weekly teleclasses are just one part of the journey that we'll be taking together. You'll also be getting a homework assignment, a meditation homework assignment, which will be a continuation of one of the practices we'll do during the class. And more than that, during this particular teleconference, I'm going to be suggesting that you consider finding a partner. Debbie, my assistant, and the great logistics coordinator of these teleconferences will match you up with a partner, preferably in your time zone, because you're going to be getting several contemplative exercises that will be very, very helpful to practice with a partner. Although, of course, any of them can be practiced by yourself as well. There's, as you know, there's a certain relational power that occurs when you're practicing with somebody else. And this is especially true when we're doing inquiry practices. So I encourage you to find a partner if that works for you. There'll also, of course, be a listserv. And the listserv is actually part of the heart of the course. There are some of you who are very eloquent on the listserv, some of you who are quieter. But I think all of us at some point really do feel the value of the satsang of the sangham that we experience when we're practicing together in this particular way. The third thing I want to suggest is that we just take a moment as we begin and tune into the very powerful presence, the energy of all of us here, the energy that's really the Shakti vortex, the energy vortex that's called together when we begin one of these classes. So let's just have a moment of silence. You can breathe into the silence. And as you tune into the silence without my speaking and the silence that appears around the words I speak, see if you can tune into the invisible field, the subtle community. And let's have a moment of just fully recognizing the beloved community which we're able to be present to, benefit from, offer to, and receive from during these classes. One of the aspects of the Divine Feminine one of the profound experiences that we have when we become present to the divine feminine, either in ourselves or in a group or in nature or in any one of the manifold ways in which we can experience and know her, we begin to realize that one of the qualities of the sacred feminine, which all human beings hold within ourselves, is that the sacred feminine holds space. The sacred feminine is, among other aspects, the presence that holds the space for our transformation, and she is also the energy within that holding space that sparks transformation. So in the silence and in the group coming together, there is that space for transformation, for holding, for creating a container in which we can see ourselves, nourish ourselves, look into ourselves with safety, and also the powerful energy which wants to bring grace into our lives, which wants to actually remove for us the qualities inside consciousness that keep us bound and stuck, and expand those qualities inside consciousness, inside your consciousness, and inside my consciousness, which allow us to expand towards unity, towards clarity, towards wisdom. So I've called this journey Dancing with the Divine Feminine for several reasons. First, because the dancer is one of the great images for the Divine Feminine, for the archetypal Divine Feminine. And the second reason that I've called it Dancing with the Divine Feminine is because there is something in the Shakti, in the feminine power in the universe, that tends to hide and reveal herself. And in that sense, our relationship with the feminine divine, both in the interior and in the exterior, is often a dance in which now we see her, now we don't, until we actually learn how to recognize her even when she's hiding. So the unknowable quality of the divine feminine is, of course, the unknowable quality of Source, the unknowable quality of the divine itself. And what I think many of you find is that when we try to confront that aspect of the sublime grace-bestowing power frontally, when we try to confront it face-to-face, it often eludes us. And so the tradition tells us that the way to find the goddess is to court her sidelong glance. You know, that if you've ever seen a picture of some of the pictures of the goddess, and some of them she's looking straight at you, but there are others in which it seems that she's turning her face slightly away in a gesture of modesty, which is one of the gestures of the goddess. And in that gesture, we actually can catch her looking at us through the sides of her eyes, through her sidelong glance. It's one of the very graceful ways to know the feminine. But one of the names of the goddess, one of the names of the divine feminine is Durga, which actually means difficult to know. She's hard to find as well as hard to conquer. And yet, when we learn to dance with her, to partner with her, then the qualities of the sacred feminine, even the hidden qualities, begin to become very apparent, very obvious. And of course, one of the most important and profound ways in which we come to know the sacred feminine is as our own internal, interior energy of awakening. So we are, during these 3 weeks, going to become more and more familiar with the awakening aspect of our own interior feminine. who lives inside us, both as the impulse to evolve, as the will to evolve, and also as the interior energy that's awakened in meditation and that evolves our consciousness subtly in a hidden way and also in a way that's very, very deeply apparent to us when our lives change and transform. So let's begin now by settling our posture. Among many other things, we're going to be meditating together. So you can begin by finding yourself a comfortable meditation posture. If you're sitting on a chair, let your feet be flat on the floor. And if you're sitting on the floor, if you're sitting cross-legged, it's very good to have the base of your posture a couple of inches higher than your knees. And you can breathe in and allow the breath to go down into your pelvic area and make the base of your posture heavy and grounded. And then with the exhalation, feel as though the energy is flowing up your body, flowing up through the crown. Inhaling, let the chest lift and open. Exhaling, let the shoulder blades release onto the back. And we're going to begin by chanting some mantras, some seed mantras, mantras which invoke the Divine Feminine. And you've received these mantras on a sheet of paper. If, for whatever reason, you haven't downloaded them or you haven't gotten your email, you're going to be able to sing along with us, and the mantras will be there for you during the week. The mantras are Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche. Om is the primordial creative sound at the heart of all the cosmos. It's the sound that they say still resonates in the cosmos, resonates at the heart of every sound. Aim is the seed mantra of Saraswati, the goddess of speech, wisdom, learning, and creativity. It's a mantra that's inherently creative. Hrim is the seed mantra of the divine energy of Bhuvaneshwari, whose name means that which moves in space. And Hrim is the power that manifests the physical universe in the body. So you can see these first three syllables are mantras of creativity. Klim, the fourth mantra, is the seed of Kali, who is the power of creative destruction and ultimate liberation. And Chamundaye is one of the names for the goddess that describes her as the one who neutralizes the dark forces of ego and allows us to transmute the dark part of our ego, the dark face of our ego, into the enlightened face of ego, which is the ego of recognizing yourself as one with all that is. And Viche, which has been translated here as the one who shines forth, also means the one who removes, in the sense the one who cuts, as the sword of wisdom, which cuts away everything that's diluted. And we're going to chant these mantras in a non-traditional but very sweet form. And you can begin now by having the mantras in front of you, or if you don't have them in front of you, you can just listen and then join in when you're ready. And we'll chat for just a few minutes, and then we'll do an invocation.
Thank you.
Aim Hrim Klim Chamundai Viche. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundai Viche. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundai Viche. And we're going to now say together the invocation to Shakti, which is also on the sheet of paper that you received. I'll say the first line, and you can say it silently or out loud. O power beyond all powers, lover and mother of the universe, you are the life within my life, the breath within my breath. My body, senses, and mind are rays of light from your body of light. They are ripples in the ocean of your splendor. When your eyes open, you manifest as the world, spilling forth as planets and stars. As mountains and rivers, as the tiger's open mouth, as the petals of a rose. As the spiny stems of sea anemones. You have become my joy and my pain. The vastness of my enlightened awareness and the thorny knots of my confusion. May your love bring joy to all beings. May your power destroy suffering. May we know your light within all that lives. And you can close your eyes. We're going to do our first very simple meditation with the awareness of the Divine Feminine as the life force energy within the breath. So you can attend to the breath as it flows in and out of your nostrils. Noticing the way the breath comes in cool on the inhalation, flows out of the body warm on the exhalation. Have the recognition that the breath is flowing in as the flowing of the sacred feminine energy. And the breath is flowing out as the expression of the sacred flowing energy, the sacred feminine energy. Breath flows in and flows out. Allow the breath to bring your attention to your inner body. And let yourself feel your body. Open up to the feeling in your body as it is now at this moment. The parts of your body that feel tense or tired or relaxed, the temperature, the sensations of warmth and coolness. Allow your attention to flow as the breath flows to the different places in your body where your attention is called. Recognizing that wherever your attention goes, behind the specifics of this is my nostril, this is my shoulder, this is my belly. Behind all that is a radiant energy. And that if you simply tune into your body and your breath as a massive sensation, as a massive radiant sensation, you begin to open up to the pulsing energy with which the goddess, the Shakti, the dynamic power within the universe, is expressing herself through your body. Without trying to create a story about it, although we'll create some stories later on, just let yourself feel the radiant energy in your body, the radiant presence inside the breath and inside your body sensations. And allow yourself to open to the recognition that the great life force, the creative energy of the universe, has most intimately and cozily become this body of yours and is living as this body and is flowing as the breath beating through the heart, pulsing in your body as the blood, dancing in your mind as different thoughts, emotions, and energies. And notice how it feels to experience your own body and mind with the thought, all of this is made of particles of divine goddess energy. My body and mind are made of Shakti. I'm fully empowered, I'm enlivened, I'm lived by this Shakti, this energy whose nature is love, whose quality above all is love. Just let yourself relax into that recognition. So as we begin the discursive part of our class, and we'll be moving into in and out of meditative experience as we go on, I want to just spend a moment or two getting clear about the way we're looking at the universe in this, the paradigm really of the tantric traditions, And for those of you who are less familiar than others with Tantra, there's a written handout available on the private area of the website. But the underpinning of what we're doing here is the recognition that everything in the universe, whatever exists and doesn't exist, is part of a single, creative, interdependent, and absolutely non-dual, non-differentiated presence, which has as its basis the qualities of awareness and love, and which, of course, differentiates, becomes this wildly diverse universe that we experience as close to us and far from us, as mostly separate from us. And the qualities of the sacred oneness, the qualities of awareness and love in the tantras are defined in a non-gender-specific way, but nonetheless defined as essentially masculine and essentially feminine. And the masculine quality in the universe, which in the Sanskrit tradition, in the tradition from which we're speaking, is called Shiva, Shiva being that which underlies, that which is supremely auspicious, and the feminine being called Shakti, Shakti meaning power, dynamism, force. The Shiva aspect of consciousness, the masculine, in the tradition is considered to be pure light, pure peace, and pure stillness, whereas the dynamism of the divine is considered to be feminine. So if we were to divide that which is indivisible into two parts, and of course we think of the yin-yang symbol as the beautiful symbolic rendition of something that is whole, that is one, and yet has two aspects, which are like two sides of a coin. The masculine side, the Shiva side, embodies the power of being conscious, of being aware, of being awake. And the feminine side, the Shakti, embodies the power itself. It embodies creativity itself. So what we say in the tradition is that awareness and power, stillness and creativity, are utterly and intrinsically woven together in the divine fabric. And yet that when the divine masculine wants to manifest as power, he must borrow, he must take power from the feminine. Whereas when the divine feminine wants to experience awareness, she must take it from the divine masculine. And of course, these truths are inherent in consciousness, which in both men and women has the qualities of both awareness and dynamism. But in the cosmic sense that we're beginning this conversation, what we want to understand is that the feminine is power itself, and that in the tradition, the power of the feminine brings forth creative manifestations from within herself. So in this process of manifesting worlds inside herself, she naturally creates the experience of difference, separation, and ultimately what we human beings, in our current inability to fully understand, to really get the full picture, what we experience is suffering. And so what the tradition says is that the Shakti, the divine feminine, manifests as duality, differentiation, every single form of creativity, positive and negative. And she also manifests as the veil of concealment, which keeps us as human beings from fully recognizing what we are, from fully recognizing our oneness with the whole, and from fully recognizing the actual divinity that is our source. So you know this because you've all been doing spiritual practice for a long time. So the feminine manifests this world as, as this vast magic show or tapestry of experience. And living within it, she keeps it going through the processes of birth, death, manifestation, sustenance, dissolution. But she also lives within reality as the force which awakens consciousness to itself. So the Shakti, the divine feminine, which creates this differentiation and this duality and hides our real nature from us, also is the force which wakes us up to show us who and what we are. And it's that recognition, that understanding about the feminine as both the force of Maya, as she's called in the Indian tradition, the force who conceals reality and actually pulls a veil over our eyes so that we can't recognize that we're all one, that we're all part of God. She manifests that, and she also takes the veil off, shows us who and what we are. And the celebration of the goddess that we'll be doing in the next few weeks is actually a celebration of that force in consciousness which both creates worlds, manifests worlds, conceals reality, and yet at a certain point awakens us, reveals reality for what it is, which is intrinsically blissful. So in understanding the goddess and in understanding the world which the goddess has made and which manifests in us, it's very helpful to recognize that she manifests as light and as shadow. She manifests as sublime acceptance and as this power which differentiates. One contemporary author whom I like very much has written that in order to understand and to practice in the world as it is today, as it is during this time of profound change that is manifesting on every possible level of experience, we have to really come to know the feminine and the nature of the divine feminine. And when I say come to know the feminine, I don't necessarily mean come to know women as human women, but to come to know the feminine who exists in men as well as women, and who also exists in the natural flow of life in the universe. And it's this author says very beautifully that it's only when we come to know the sacred feminine for what she is, for her subtlety and flexibility, but also her ruthless, radical power of dissolving structures and dogmas, dissolving conceptual prisons, cages. Only then can this incredibly powerful shift in consciousness that is being birthed now, that the goddess herself is birthing, it's only then that shift in consciousness can be complete. And people like ourselves who've had the good fortune, who have what the Buddhists call a precious human life, which is to say a life that has enough privilege, enough leisure, enough, let's say, evolution in it for us to be able to seriously consider these questions. Of course, there are millions of people in this world who don't have the leisure, who don't have the education, who don't have the capacity to consider these questions. So when we do, it's very important that we be willing to both accept the privilege and the responsibility for knowing who it is that is acting in us as us, and to be able to look deeply both into the masculine essence, which is pure awareness, pure freedom, and into the feminine essence, which is pure, absolute dynamism and flow. So, the feminine expresses herself through all the energies in our being and all the energies in the universe. And we can relate to these energies fearfully or invitingly. We can relate to them consciously or unconsciously. We can feel, as it were, victimized by them. We can try to control them. Or we can sort of melt down under the impact of them. But what the goddess traditions offer us is a way to recognize how the divine feminine operates both within us and also as the larger forces of the deity powers, the goddess shaktis. And for this, we're going to do a practice called deity practice. That is the practice of coming to know energy as deity, as an archetypal force, as a personal presence in the universe. And through that deity energy, we're going to actually allow ourselves to understand our own bodies and minds as expressions of deity, as expressions of divinity. So that's really the basis of what we're doing, this awareness of the sacred feminine, both as the power that awakens us and as the power that wants to embody herself in us, the power that wants to allow us to recognize the divine feminine energy inside ourselves. So, again, let's come back to the breath. Allow your body to take a slightly more upright posture. Allow the breath to flow in a very natural way. And this time, as the breath flows in, have the feeling that you're breathing in particles of the divine feminine energy, the energy of awakening that is being showered on you from every particle of the air around you. As we invoke her, as we speak of her, we call her forth, and she, in this very moment, is very present in the atmosphere around you. Present invisibly, perhaps visibly for some of you. So you can allow yourself now to simply breathe in her energy without any sense necessarily of her form. Breathe in her energy in the form of golden particles of light. Delicate golden particles of light. Each particle of light filled with her intent to awaken you, to open you, to allow you to see yourself both as an aspect of the goddess and as an open vessel for the power of the goddess to enter you and literally fill you with her love and creativity. So just let yourself now inhale with the sense of breathing in these golden particles of goddess energy and breathing them out. Breathing them in and breathing them out. Taking in the presence of the goddess with every breath. And with the exhalation, you might feel this energy as golden particles of light flowing through your body, enlivening and empowering your body, and then flowing out through your pores. So as you take in the blessing of the goddess and allow it to flow through your body, Your exhalation also lets it flow out into the room and into the atmosphere, where your breath becomes a vehicle for the blessing of the goddess to flow into the world. And you can open your eyes or you can close them. In the tantric tradition, the practice of deity meditation is one of the most significant ways in which we take divine energy into our bodies. And it's based on an understanding of the universe that's not unique to Hinduism, but it's not an understanding that is that familiar in the Western Judeo-Christian tradition. So I'd just like to say a little bit about it. The Indian philosophers were very comfortable with the understanding that reality was both an utterly formless, pervading presence, vast, subtle, impersonal, and that that same presence could also take a form, could also embody itself in a body of light that could be felt and even seen in meditation. And the understanding is that these deity energies, these deity bodies, as it were, are all aspects of the one divine awareness bliss. They're all aspects of that single, formless, unknowable suchness that is the great mind which manifests all that is. So deities are, in India and Tibet, are really facets of the power and energy that are at the heart of life. And the practice of becoming present to these energies, to these deity energies, of actually focusing on them, giving them forms, understanding their attributes, is one of the most skillful ways there is of bringing ourselves as beings in bodies into the presence of divinity as an accessible power. And in India and in Tibet, deity practice is done in several ways. I would also add, as you know, many of you are familiar with the Jungian concept of archetypes, an archetype being a constellated, kind of crystallized, subtle form that exists inside consciousness, inside the collective consciousness of humanity and also of the universe. Another way of understanding deity energy is as a kind of elemental presence, or what we could say a cosmic tendency, a cosmic habit. So depending on your orientation, you can see a deity as a divine presence, you know, a divine person, as an archetype in consciousness, or as an elemental tendency in the universe. For example, the universe has a tendency to bring things into being, to maintain them, to dissolve them, and this tendency to manifest, to sustain, and to dissolve is actually in every particle of reality. And it also is embodied in deity figures. The consciousness has a tendency towards peace and stillness. It has a tendency toward extreme activity. It has a tendency towards movement, a tendency towards stillness. And these tendencies express themselves in weather, in emotional weather, in character traits. So, you know, there is actually a deep presence in the universe that's called into being when we we're sitting in a spring-like, in a beautiful spring day in a forest grove, and there's a light breeze floating around, and the birds are singing, and you can actually feel that nature is in a romantic mood. Or when you're standing in the center of a hurricane, the whole external world is manifesting wild, violent energy, and it's obviously a very different mood. So deities personify these energies in nature, and that's one of the ways we can recognize deity in nature. So, you know, for example, the goddess Kali, whom we're going to be talking about this week, is often described as being manifest in lightning, in the sudden flash of lightning, which illuminates the sky and is both beautiful and terrible, and which is filled with powerful electrical currents, powerful, powerful dynamism. The goddess Lakshmi, whom we'll be practicing with next week, is the energy who's manifest on that beautiful romantic spring day that we were talking about. The goddess Saraswati, the goddess of creativity and clarity, is present in the shaft of sunlight. I experience her in that shaft of winter sunlight that brings enormous clarity and brilliance to the day. So, you know, these goddess energies are manifesting in nature. They're manifesting as a presence, as a personal presence. And the fact is that every one of the goddess energies, Kali, Durga, Lakshmi, Saraswati, and all the others, each one of the goddess energies encompasses, incarnates a particular form of divine love. Some of them are soft, some of them are very, very powerful and intense and brilliant. But because the goddess is the epitome of divine love, there is no way that if you meditate on the goddess, there is no way that that love won't reveal itself to you in one form or another. And the third way that we recognize the goddess in ourselves is as the awakened energy that's called Kundalini, the energy that flows through us in meditation, in spiritual practice, that often manifests in our body as physical movements or as feelings of insight and blissfulness, as big transformations in our life. So the goddess manifests in us in these very internal ways, as well as manifesting in nature and manifesting in a specific form. So the process of awakening the goddess is actually a process of conscious evolution. It is the goddess energy that we are invoking in these classes is the energy of the goddess as conscious evolution. That is to say, what we're doing is tuning ourselves into the force that is at this moment evolving consciousness. Perhaps, as many people say, evolving consciousness at a greater rate than has ever happened before in human history. It's hard to know whether that's absolutely true or not, but it certainly feels that way. But it's an enormously important thing to recognize, and it's a recognition that some of the great evolutionary thinkers of modern times have seen, have understood, which is that we are living in a time when a great stream of awakening energy, of evolutionary energy, is flowing towards us. The great 20th century sage Aurobindo wrote very, very beautifully about this. He spoke about how there's an absolute necessity at this time for us to become available to the energy of the goddess, to the energy of the cosmos, as she literally transforms and saves our lives. So this awakening process, this process of awakening the goddess, this natural evolutionary process, which is an awakening to the sacred, comes about through four different essential forms of the goddess. And when I speak about these four forms of the goddess, which is the forms of the goddess whom we're going to be practicing with in this time, you should understand that these are, let's say, the fundamental, most powerful expressions of the goddess in Indian culture. There are thousands of names and thousands of forms of the goddess, but each of them actually is an aspect of these four goddesses. So the first aspect of the goddess is called Maheshwari. Maheshwari means great goddess, and her quality is of absolute spaciousness, pure peace. She's transcendent space. She's the space in which everything manifests, and she's often called Durga. Durga, the one who is hard to know. She's the quality of Durga, of Maheshwari, is a quality of all-encompassing wideness, which sometimes manifests as intense dynamism, sometimes as great sweetness, sometimes as clarity. And in these three aspects, she's known as Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, and Mahasaraswati. The fundamental story of the goddess, the story in which the goddess bursts into human life, is the story of Goddess Durga. I'm not going to tell it to you now. I'm simply going to refer to it, give you the bare bones of it. But the story of the goddess Durga takes place at a time when the universe is just in a profound dysfunction. These two invincible demon brothers have literally conquered the world. We can say that they're the forces of lust and greed. They're the forces of unbridled tyranny and every single form of greed and tyranny. You know, from the kind of totalitarianism of certain cultures to the greediness of corporate capitalism, these demons incarnate it all, and they've enslaved the world. Their particular strength lies in the fact that they've received a boon that they can't be defeated by any male, whether man, god, or other creature. So eventually the gods go seek out the presence of the goddess, who is hidden in the mountains, and they beg her to come and save them from the demons. So the goddess, of course, agrees. She agrees to take a form, to embody as a form, and save the world. And the story goes that she takes the form of this exquisitely beautiful woman. She's, if you can imagine her, which is very fun to do, she has lustrous, huge eyes in a golden face. Her skin is golden and luscious. She's 16 years old. Her hair flows down her back. She's wearing a silk cloth around her body. Her hips are in perfect proportion to her breasts. She's so exquisitely beautiful that even the trees bow down in front of her. She's the incarnation of divine beauty. And she rides a lion who represents her strength and power and her connection to the earth. And she manifests herself in the garden of the demons, looking so exquisitely and irresistibly beautiful that the demons, of course, fall in love with her, and they send a messenger out to ask her if she'll become their chief wife. To which she replies, "Even though I would love to be in partnership with you, mighty kings, as a child, as a girl, I took a vow that I could only marry a man who could defeat me in battle." So this message goes back and forth. The demons send armies to defeat the goddess, and she destroys all the armies. And at one point, as these armies keep coming, she begins to manifest subsidiary forms out of herself. So the goddess Kali arises from out of the goddess Durga's heart. We'll say more about her in a moment. She's utterly fearsome, dark blue in color, with a long tongue with which she licks up the blood of the slain demons, weapons in every hand. She's an utter whirlwind of destruction. But along with her also come the goddess Lakshmi and Saraswati, each of them riding beautiful birds and sprinkling holy water over the battlefield, which immediately annihilates the demons. So these forms of the goddess remove the egoic manifestations of these demonic qualities from the earth. And at one point, the two demons who have been deprived of their egoic armies stand before the goddess and say, "You said you were going to defeat us single-handed, but you've had all these helpers." She says, "No, these are all forms of myself." So all these forms of the goddess come back into her being. So as we contemplate the goddess, we think of the goddess as one with vast powers which are manifest through each of us. And today we're going to practice with the most dynamic form of the goddess Kali. Next week we'll practice with Lakshmi, and the following week we'll practice with Saraswati. And as we begin our meditation and our contemplation of Kali, I want to explain something of what the tradition says about why these goddesses are meditated on in sequence. When the goddess awakens within us in the form of the Kundalini Shakti, in the form of the awakening power, she performs three divine functions. First, she purifies us. She removes every trace of our confusion, of our ignorance, of our false ideas, of our conditioning, of our sense of unworthiness, of our anger, of our greediness. The energy of the goddess moving within us acts through us in many, many different ways to bring out and dissolve the qualities in us which are the negative manifestations of ego. And in that form, she's Kali. The goddess also manifests within us to reveal our divine qualities of good fortune, of pleasure, of the blissful appreciation of life. She comes forth as our beauty. When we're awakened, even if we're not very beautiful, there's a kind of radiance that comes over us. Our speech becomes sweet. Our relationships become harmonious. This is the quality of Lakshmi being awakened in us. And thirdly, the qualities of extraordinary insight and skill are awakened in us. Saraswati is the Shakti of insight, of clarity, of learning, the ability to understand everything, to understand even that which we couldn't understand. And when the power of Sarasvati is awakened in us, we suddenly can recognize the truths in esoteric texts. If we've been practicing a particular spiritual tradition, we suddenly get all the connections between the elements of our tradition which were hard to understand. We get inspiration and creative ability, and often we begin to write poetry and songs. We become profoundly creative. And these three aspects of the goddess, Kali, Lakshmi, and Saraswati, Kali, the power of divine dynamism, Lakshmi, the power of harmony and love, and Saraswati, the power of insight and creativity. All these powers are awakened in us, and they manifest in us in different ways in the course of our life. So it's not as though, you know, you have an awakening and all of a sudden there's intense purification going on, and when that's over in a linear sequence, you begin to experience blissfulness and insight. No, in fact, you know, in our spiritual process, all these goddess energies manifest simultaneously. Sometimes one is more predominant than another. But it's very important, very helpful, not only to recognize them within us, but also to learn how to invoke their love, to invoke their protection and their grace. So the energy of Kali, the energy of Kali means the dark one. Aurobindo says of Kali that when we have the grace of Kali, transformations that would take 300 years can be accomplished in a day. And this is actually my experience of Kali. So we're going to begin with a meditation, and then we'll talk a little more about her. So you might like to stand and stretch for a moment. And when you're ready to take your seat, please do so. Imagine yourself now lying in a meadow. It's deep midnight, and the sky is that midnight blue that you only see on a mountaintop or by the sea when there are no lights from the towns. And as you're lying in your posture, and you can have this imagination while sitting up, you look up at the sky and you see that it's filled with stars. You can see the Milky Way. You can see the constellations. You can see the far away and close lights of the cosmos, enlivening and enlightening the blue-black darkness. And you see, as you look, that the darkness, the night, begins to coalesce into the form of an exquisitely beautiful maiden. Her body is as dark as the nighttime sky. Her face is exquisitely beautiful. Her hair is long, deep black, wild, unbound, wild, and it streams out to every side. Her eyes are like almond-shaped, dark brown lotuses. Her nose is exquisite. Her mouth is full and rich and red. She's smiling. And you notice now that her body is naked with full breasts. And around her slender waist is an apron of hands. She has four arms. In one of her arms, she holds a sword. In another, she holds a bowl, which is filled with a red liquid, which represents actually the wine of consciousness. In another hand, she holds a severed head. And in another hand, she holds a spear. So she's wearing she's carrying very frightening implements. But if you look at her face, you realize her face is totally and fully alive with love. She's looking at you with a gaze of so much sweetness, so much adoration, so much grace. And you allow yourself to look into the eyes of Kali. Her bare feet are dancing. Her face is alight with the power of grace. And now with each inhalation, you will allow yourself to breathe in the dynamic wildness, the awakening power of the goddess Kali. You feel that with each breath, her energy enters your heart and cleans your heart of any veils, any sense of limitation, any feeling of unworthiness. The energy from Kali's eyes, the grace, the glance from Kali's eyes enters your heart with a silvery light and fills your heart with light and power and love. With each inhalation, you feel the different qualities of Kali's glance. It cleanses your heart, empowers your heart, and it fills your heart with love. And your breath draws in the energy of Kali, the exquisite energy of Kali. And with the exhalation, you feel that energy flowing through your being. Flowing through your heart, flowing through your body. Now remove the image of the goddess. And just allow your energy to rest inside your heart. And imagine your heart as this vast sky. Imagine your heart expanding, becoming large enough to fill the world. Imagine that the energy with which Kali has infused you can now pour out as blessing . So with each inhalation, You feel your heart softening and enlarging with each exhalation. You feel the energy in your heart pouring out into the world around you as blessing, cleansing, empowering, filling with love, whatever it touches. So as your meditation settles and you open your eyes or open your ears to hear what I want to say, I want to tell you that we're actually going to be meditating with Kali's awakening energy as the week goes on. And I believe that as you practice with it, with her, and with the understanding of the Divine Feminine, who she is for you in all her guises, you will begin to experience some of the awakening magic that Kali offers. And I want to just say a little bit about her iconography. Kali is pure strength. She's the utter, absolute wildness of creative consciousness. And the strength of Kali is an aspect of the feminine that, especially within our humanity, that's not always easy for us to recognize and own. But the way I would describe Kali is as the energy that both pushes the child out of the womb. She's, those of you who've had children will know that at the moment of birth, the energy that seizes you and that gives birth is the most powerful energy there is. And it's an energy that creates transformation and awakening from inside. That is, it brings forth the new life from inside the old. And that capacity for bringing forth new life from the old is an act that requires enormous strength and power. It's not a soft act. It's an act that sometimes looks overwhelming or even violent. And yet if you remember the unbelievable calm, the beauty of the atmosphere after a rainstorm, the bliss of holding a baby after the incredible power and difficulty of the birth, you recognize that what Kali's energy creates is something that no other force in the universe can manage. That is to say, she is rebirth incarnate. And, you know, in that process, what Kali does is actually dissolve whatever lies in the way of the new birth. So in our lives, in our spiritual lives, that's what she offers us. She offers us this power which will literally dissolve your old stuff. And I often used to joke that what I always wanted was that some power would come along and sort of gently take away my, you know, my restricting, limiting ego while I slept. You know, I'd just sort of wake up in the morning and it wouldn't be there. But that actually isn't for most of us how that happens. For most of us, the process of having the limitations and strictures removed can be, let's say, a tug of war because we tend to resist them. So instead of just letting them kind of fly off, there's this kind of tug of war as Kali dissolves and we say, no, let me hold on. But, you know, what we find as we learn to open up to her and to see her for who she is, for what she is, we realize that what she holds within us is the power of our most profound erotic holiness, the power which has the courage to dissolve that which is unnecessary. She also is in a very deep and beautiful way, she's the sword of discrimination. She's that quality in us which can discern the path, which can just cut aside, cut away everything on the path that's extraneous and allow us to move through whatever we have to move through in order to be what we are. So when you approach Kali, when you practice with Kali, she understand that you can call her forth in those moments when you're distracted, in those moments where you're frightened, in those moments where you feel the depth of your limitations and you desperately need to let go of them, when you know it's time to let go of something. Kali is the one you call upon, and Kali is your goddess for this. And as we end tonight, we're going to allow ourselves to experience the boon of Kali's freedom. The boon of Kali's freedom, which we experience when we offer to her those qualities, those things, those pieces of our life that want to let go, which we might have been holding on to. And we're going to practice tonight with Kali as fire. If you look at the picture that we sent you, which you don't have to do right now, you'll see that in the picture, in the painting of Kali, she's holding a bowl and the flames are coming out of the bowl. And that bowl represents the fire of consciousness into which you can fling all your obstructions. And what that means is that when there's been a loss, or when you feel stuck, that offering that into Kali's bowl, into the flames, will transmute and resolve whatever it is that's stuck in you and allow it to transform into light. You know, we know that energy is never destroyed. It's always transformed. This is what Kali's bowl of flames does. It transforms the energy within us. She transforms our karmas. She transforms our obstacles. So you can close your eyes and imagine before you Kali's bowl. It's a golden bowl set with jewels. And inside it are beautiful flames, golden orange flames. And it's being held before you by Kali's two hands, her beautiful dark blue hands. And in this moment, what you're going to do is have the sense that you reach into your heart and you pluck out of your heart anything that feels limiting, that feels like a remnant of your old confusion. It feels like something that you'd like to let go of, that you haven't been able to let go of. You don't even have to know what it is. Just have the feeling that you're, one by one, you're placing obstructions in Kali's bowl. You know, in Kali's bowl, I place my ignorance. In Kali's bowl, I place my confusion. I offer to Kali's flames all the limiting ideas I've had about myself. I offer to Kali's flames my anger at others, my anger at myself. I offer my sense of unworthiness. And look at how the flame blazes up as you make this offering. Notice how when you offer an obstruction or a limitation, or even just a feeling in yourself that there's something that wants to let go, as you offer it into these golden orange flames of Kali's bowl, feel how the area within your heart actually becomes lighter, becomes freer. Little by little, just offer what you have to offer into Kali's fire. And as you make the offering, as the flame rises up to accept your offering, you hear the sound cream, the sound cream, the sound of Kali's seed mantra. It arises out of the flames like the sound of the flames, opening up to receive whatever you offer into the fire. Cream, 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 cream. It's cream with an R and cream with an L. Cream, cream. Cream. Now cream. Cream. The seed mantra of Kali's liberation. Cream. 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 Cream, as you offer whatever you have to offer. And in this moment, as you offered limitations and obstructions and confusion into the fire, Now imagine yourself reaching into your heart and offering your aspiration for transformation, your aspiration to open fully to the divine forces within you, your aspiration to help all beings. Offer these into the goddess's fire. Offer your aspiration, your desire to help, your wish for pure clarity and love to fill you. And as you allow those qualities to slip into the fire, feel that the fire blazes high and that the transcendent love that takes the form of Kali's brilliant yellow-gold flames rises up and takes your love and aspiration into the heavens, into the cosmos. And the fire dissolves. You yourself are seated in your meditation posture. Your breath is flowing into the heart. And with each inhalation, you're breathing the most brilliant and intense form of divine love that exists in this universe. The awakening, transformative adoration that the goddess Kali has for you and for her world. Allow yourself to breathe in that profound love with every inhalation and with every exhalation. Imagine it flowing out with your breath into the universe. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free of suffering. May all beings know their oneness. We'll be bringing our class to a close, and if you can sit in meditation for a few more minutes, that's good. You'll be receiving a homework assignment, a meditation homework assignment, and also a longer contemplation assignment, which I'm hoping that you'll find some time to work with this week, because each one of these contemplative questions can really open up your sense of your relationship with the goddess. But even if you only do one or two of them, I promise you they'll be profound. And there's a question, the first question in the contemplative homework is a question about how the divine feminine appears and presents herself in you and as you. So if you choose only one question to practice with, that's the one I would offer. That along with the meditation. So again, have a beautiful evening and a beautiful week. Please write your questions and sharings and the results of your contemplations on the listserv. If you have questions, I will answer them. And, of course, others in the group also will share. And in this way, we'll keep our conversation going in the heart of the Divine Mother. Once again, I give you my great love. Namaste. Good night.